Yeah, thank you very much, Lynn. Oh, as I say, Jay may have stepped away or something and didn't realize. Or maybe he was listening with his eyes closed. You were here. I often listen with my eyes closed, so if I was doing that, I wouldn't be aware of the time. But hello, everyone. Welcome to Seven Steps to Awakening. I just want to say that at the end of this hour, I will end a few minutes early and turn the mic over to Lynn. Lynn, only for a couple of minutes. While I save the Seven Steps audio, close it, and then open up the Michael Langford audio. So that will take me just a couple of minutes to do that. But what we're going to do right after this hour is we're going to listen to the first of two Michael Langford audios that I have to share. The first one is more him talking, so we'll hear more of him talking, maybe a little bit of conversation, but not a lot tonight. And then next week, right after Seven Steps, we'll play the second audio, and that audio is much more conversational between me and him. So two different audios to listen to, and we'll begin again right after Seven Steps. But first, we're going to do the Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight, I'm going to start with quote 714. So there is the link to 714. And I think I will go ahead and start with a song. I like to play a song. It gives me just that opportunity to kind of get centered before the teaching starts. So I'm opening up iTunes. And I don't know what I want to listen to. I'm going to, like, spin the dial and see where it lands. Okay, it's landed on Josh Groban, Remember. So let's listen to Josh.
Whatever you tell, my story.
powerful song. It seems to me like I saw it once on YouTube, and I could be wrong. I want you to know that I could be wrong in what I'm about to say, but it seems like I saw that song played once in YouTube with somebody showing different pictures of Jesus, right? So Jesus was saying, you know, as long as you remember me, right? The first time I ever heard the song was amazingly right after I sent NTI to the publisher. And at that time, that left me with this sense of emptiness, you know, like I had become accustomed to listening to Holy Spirit every day and writing NTI, and I didn't know at that point if that was over or not. And so right when I'm in that state of not knowing if hearing Holy Spirit was over or not, that's when I somehow came across this song. And it really spoke to me that day. It's saying, as long as you tell my story, which to me meant, you know, you just keep teaching from that inspiration, right? You just keep coming here and teaching from that spontaneity. As long as you tell my story, I live in you, right? I'll never die. And that was extremely meaningful to me on that day. So that was a very favorite song at that time. I haven't listened to it in a long time, so it was fun to listen to it today. Yeah, and Kathy's saying some people feel lost after 2 years of MPP. Yeah, I'm sure it's that same emptiness that I felt after finishing NTI. But it all continues if we want it to continue. It just continues in a new way. And for me now, as you know, part of how it's continuing is through the 7 steps to awakening, which brings us to our current topic. So let me read to you. This is quote 714. And the quote we're going to be discussing tonight. This creation is no doubt born of ignorance, and the belief in creation destroys true perception. Though this creation is unreal, yet on account of the emergence of the ego sense, it appears to be solidly real. I'll read that quote one more time. This creation is no doubt born of ignorance, and the belief in creation destroys true perception. Though this creation is unreal, yet on account of the emergence of the ego sense, it appears to be solidly real. So that's the quote. A few weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I had John Sherman here as a satsang guest. And some of you may have heard that, so you might be familiar with John Sherman. And I believe that what John Sherman was teaching is the same self-inquiry that Ramana Maharshi teaches, the same awareness, watching awareness that Michael Langford teaches, the same watching the I Am presence that Nisargadatta teaches. But he worded it differently. And I think that oftentimes when teachers word things a certain way, it's because that's the way that it dawned on them, right? That's the way that it clicked for them. Like if you read Michael Langford's book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, he talks about how, you know, when he discovered awareness, watching awareness, now he understood. Like for him, that was a big discovery, awareness, watching awareness. That language was very clear to him. That taught him exactly what he was doing in meditation. Well, I think for Nisargadatta, it was the I Am presence. That wasn't as clear for Michael, but that was perfectly clear for Nisargadatta. And the words that John Sherman shared with us a few weeks ago, that's the wording that was very clear to him. The wording he used was just look for you. And of course, if he was talking to himself, I'm sure the thought would be, just look for me, which is very similar to the question, what am I? And I'm very, very happy that language worked for John Sherman. And it must be also working for other people, hopefully, because there are people who follow John Sherman. But I think that language might be confusing to a lot of people. Just look for you. Because there's this whole ego sense that is on top of, kind of overlays, the awareness that we really want to be looking at, that we really want to be watching. And if someone doesn't have a really deep understanding when they're listening to John Sherman, I think their eyes could fall on the ego sense. Let me try and describe the ego sense as best as I can to you. I've never done this before, try and describe this, so I don't know if this will be effective at all or not. So feel free to give me your feedback. You know, let me know whether what I'm saying is connecting with you or not. But there's this, I'm going to have to call it a feeling in me. This isn't the body. Obviously, the body can have a strong ego sense to it, but this is more of a feeling, I'm going to call it inside the body. I'm trying. Like I said, I've never done this before. It's a strong feeling. It's a strong feeling, not subtle at all. It feels like me. And it has a lot of similarity to what also feels like to me, my brother, my mother, and my father. Like there's similarities in who we are as personalities. And this strong sense that makes up me also has little parts in it that's very much like them. Do you guys have that in you? Do you feel that? Do you have this sense that is very much you, and yet it may be also made up with parts of people who are closest to you? Maybe for some people it's made up with a lot of pain of certain memories. You know, if you were abused as a child, you know, I was very lucky, I didn't have those experiences, but if you were abused as a child, for example, physically or sexually or even emotionally, It that might be wrapped up in it. It's this sense of who I am in a worldly way. You know, other things that could be wrapped up in it are very strong feelings of I'm smart, or I'm successful, or I'm stupid, or I'm lazy. Like you can almost, if you're aware of this ego sense, you can feel it. It's very strong. And most people, yeah, an embodied sense of identity maybe. Most people, when you say, just look at you, you know, most people in the world, that's what they're going to think of. And that's actually the ego sense. That I don't think that's what John Sherman is pointing to. But I think maybe sometimes when we listen to his words, the way he words it, that could be what we look at. Now listen again to this quote. Now that we've maybe gotten in touch with our ego sense, was everybody able to get in touch with it? Did that? I see it worked for a few people. Was everybody able to feel that me that is the ego sense? It's a very distinct me. So now let's listen to this quote again. This creation is no doubt born of ignorance, and the belief in creation destroys true perception. Now this is the part I want you to listen to. Though this creation is unreal, yet, on account of the emergence of the ego sense, it appears to be solidly real. on account of the emergence of the ego sense, it appears to be solidly real. So whatever this is in me, that is me, and also has some similarities with my mother, my father, my brother, has some things I've learned about myself. You know, I'm responsible. That would be a big part of it for me. I'm very responsible. It's because of this. It's because I'm looking out through this that the world seems real. That's what this quote is saying. And if that is true, then it would also be true that if I learn these spiritual practices, which are the undoing of the ego sense, that as the ego sense grows weaker, or at least is less believed in, that the world would also then seem less real. Right? If the world seems real because I'm looking at it through the ego sense, then a weakening of the ego sense through an undoing process would also result in the world seeming less real. Yeah, and Barb is saying something fairly important, actually. This ego sense that we have, she's saying that our family reflects it back to us. In fact, this is why last weekend I was really enjoying being with my mom. Because I wanted to see how much in being with her, how much I would fall into believing that ego sense again, fall into being Regina again, or how much I would remain awareness, aware of awareness, aware of myself in a different way. So for me, the entire visit with my mom was like an experiment, and it worked pretty well. I'm not going to say it was 100%. I slipped into being Regina a few times. I would notice it very quickly, though, very quickly when I slipped into that ego sense, and I would come back out into being a more authentic me, right, rather than the Regina ego sense. But it's wonderful to be with family, especially if you're not with them all the time, and to go back and kind of check yourself and see where you still slip into being the personality self, the ego sense, and where you remain aware. Somebody used perfect words last week. I remember one of the words was sober. I don't think he said sober and aware. Is that person here who gave me those perfect words? And I said, yes, that's it. It might have been Phil. I don't know if Phil's here. I was like, that's it exactly. That's what I'm doing here with my mom. So Barb is correct that often when we're with the family, we slip back into that ego sense again. So family is a wonderful opportunity to practice, are they not? All right, why don't we go ahead and look at my journal. This was February 14, 2013. And I'm looking at this ego sense, I suppose, as I was contemplating this quote. And as I looked, I came to this, which may not sound like it has a lot to do with the quote. Unless you realize this was a part of my ego sense, then you'll see that it does have something to do with the quote. Something is not healed in me. It is my perception of the worst, extreme suffering and unacceptable conditions. These I feel I do not want to be real. I found a typo. I'll fix that maybe later. These I feel I do not want to be real. And this feeling comes from the fear that they are. It comes from the fear that the illusion of a spiritual reality stops here, where the absolute reality of suffering is too real to be denied. Now, this is kind of funny because I know now what I did not know on February 14th when I wrote this. So let me just tell you a little bit of a story. In January of 2013, my mom had open heart surgery, a quadruple bypass, I believe. And I didn't go see her. She asked me not to. She said it wasn't necessary, so I didn't go see her. I stayed here. But of course, I talked to her on the phone, you know, every couple days. And one day she told me this story. Her voice was very, very raspy, very raspy. And she said that since she had come out of surgery, they had this tube going down her throat. I don't remember what it's for. Some of you may know, but that's not important. But she had this tube going down her throat. And she said that wasn't really a problem because they kept her so high on painkillers that it didn't really bother her that there was a tube going down her throat. But there came a certain point where they knew they were going to take it out at, let's say, 2 p.m. You know, 2 p.m. it was scheduled to come and take this tube out. And around 1:30, her painkillers wore off. And so for half an hour, this tube in her throat was extremely bothersome. And she said with every fiber in her being, she just wanted to reach up and grab that tube and pull it out, but she couldn't because her hands were tied down. And you know they tied her down because they knew that this would be the human reaction to pull that tube out if those painkillers wore off, right? So she's laying there for half an hour with everything in her wanting to pull that tube out, and she's tied down and she can't do anything. And when my mother told me that story, I had an incredible reaction. I mean, it wasn't even happening to me, but I just had an incredible reaction. Like, that was the worst thing ever. And not too long after that, like a week or so after that, I was driving down the highway with Tom Conway. We were driving between Colorado Springs and Pueblo, and Tom mentioned that he thought he had a fear of death. And I said, I don't have a fear of death. I have a fear of suffering. Right? I have a fear of suffering. And I heard myself say that, and I knew that was true for me. Now, we want to remember that this me is the ego sense. This was a part of my ego sense makeup. Okay, so I knew this was true for me. I preferred death over suffering. This was a part of the beliefs, the thought system. And not too long after that, I wrote this, you know, which we just read, that there's something that's not healed in me. I'm seeing that. There's something that's not healed in me, and it's that perception of the worst of the worst, that perception of extreme suffering and unacceptable conditions. I said, I don't want it to be real, but I feel that the reason I don't want it to be real is because I think it is. And in fact, what this journal entry really says is, not only do I think it's real, but I actually think suffering is more real than spiritual truth. Like, spiritual truth is a wonderful game to play. I like coming here to the sanctuary, talking spiritual truth. That's all really cool. And we can play this game as long as we want until real suffering hits the fan. And then we can't pretend anymore. That's what this quote is saying, that this belief was a part of my ego sense. It's a part of my makeup. Yeah, when the rubber meets the road, we can't pretend in a spiritual truth anymore. That's what this quote says. In other words, looking out through this ego sense that suffering is more real than truth, wouldn't the world seem very, very real? Looking out through this belief, hear this as a belief, looking out through this belief that suffering is more real than truth, the world is going to look very, very real. And that's what this quote is saying. When we look out through the ego sense, the world seems real, right? So by contemplating this quote, I really found something in me that makes the world real. the belief in suffering. Now let me continue with the rest of the story. Shortly after this was written on February 14th, I think it was around the 3rd of March, I left for a trip to Israel. This was the trip where we walked the Jesus Trail. We walked from Nazareth to Capernaum, which was a four-day walk. And about halfway through this walk, we came across a calf. This calf, something was wrong with it. I don't know what. But its mother had abandoned it. And it was laying there. It couldn't get up. It was obviously severely thirsty. And it was suffering, although we don't know what it was suffering from. And it would die because it had been abandoned, but it wasn't dead yet. So it was just laying there suffering. And we had what we thought was compassion for this calf. We took out our water and we were giving it water. And we were petting it and we were trying to comfort it. And we were trying to call someone, figure out who was the farmer that owned this land. Who can we tell about this calf? And the whole time what I'm noticing is me is how badly I want the calf to die. Why? Because I have this belief in me that suffering is the worst thing ever, which means death is better than suffering. Yeah, I wanted this calf to die. Now this again is just pointing to this belief that I had in me about how real suffering is. Like suffering, I mean, listen to this. Suffering is the most real thing. All illusions die when suffering comes to the surface because it's so real. It commands our attention. And when we're suffering, we cannot deny the truth being suffering, anymore. This is the belief that's being triggered through all of these events that I'm telling you about in January, February, and March of 2013. But when I got home from that Israel trip, I got sick. I don't know what it was. I never went to the doctor. But I was suffering. I had no memory of ever experiencing this much pain before, ever. It was some kind of a virus or something, but I was really in pain. And I was laying on my bed when Danielle came home. And I just looked at her and I said, Danielle, I'm suffering. And she had never heard me use those words before, so she knew something was really up. But fortunately for me, Danielle's a nurse. And so she called a friend of hers, a nurse practitioner who can give prescriptions. And the nurse, you know, asked Danielle a few questions about my symptoms and prescribed something. And Danielle was able to go get that drug and bring it to me. And I took that drug. And within about 6 hours, the suffering, the intense, intense suffering, which really was intense, began to pass. I was still sick for 3 to 5 days, but that really intense suffering, the drug that they gave me, alleviated that. So I was able to not suffer quite so much. When I was in the suffering, it was as real as I thought suffering was. When I was in the suffering, I could not look at it with awareness, with spiritual insight, with any kind of distance at all. It was as real as I thought suffering was. It was the most real thing there is. But after the drug took effect and I wasn't suffering so much, I was still sick, but that intensity had waned. I was able to look at it. And all I can tell you was I had this sense. I didn't know what yet. I still didn't see it. I had this sense that this had something to do with a belief in me, but I didn't yet see it. You guys know more now than I did then. But I knew intuitively not to make the mistake that many people make, which is to go on some kind of a witch hunt trying to figure out what is it that I believe that caused the suffering. So I knew not to do that. I just rested, which is probably the best thing a sick person can do. I just rested. I rested completely. I rested mentally. I rested physically. I rested. And as I rested, these little memories came up on their own. The memory of my reaction to the story of my mother with the tube down her throat. The memory of me telling Tom, oh, I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of suffering. The memory of how I felt about that calf and wanting it to die. And the memory of this journal entry. And I came to see for the first time, even though this had been happening for 3 months now, now is when I had the insight. Now is when I had the clarity that this was a belief. A belief that suffering is the most real thing in the world. And that as long as I held on to the belief, that would be my experience. Yes, this is before I broke my wrist. As long as I held on to the belief, hear that? You've got to hear that. It's really important. It was a belief that suffering was the most real thing there is. As long as I held on to that belief, that would be my experience. Seeing that was so important. Because now that I saw that it was a belief, I could give my willingness for it to be healed. I could give my willingness for it to be healed. That's all I knew to do with it. I mean, what do you do with such a core belief? And one that has just proven itself true to you a day before, right? I didn't know how long it would take for this belief to be healed, but I knew that seeing that it was a belief, seeing that it's a belief is much different than thinking it's a fact, right? So before I thought it was a fact that suffering is the most real thing in the world. Now I see that it's a belief. That's an important difference. It may not sound like a lot, but it is a lot. So now that I saw that it was a belief instead of a fact, and I gave my willingness for it to be healed, I also had absolute confidence that it would be healed. I didn't know how long it would take, you know, nothing like that. I just knew that one day this would no longer be true. I would no longer see the world through this belief. And probably the first sign that I had that this healed in me was the following January. So we're talking, you know, 10 months later, which is what Lynn asked, when I broke my wrist. Yeah, when I broke my wrist, for those of you who don't know about this, I, as stupid as this sounds, this is what I did. I jumped off of a ski lift. We won't go into why. But I jumped off of a ski lift and landed on my wrist. And I didn't just break it. I destroyed it. I destroyed my wrist. You should have seen the doctor's eyes when he saw it. It was like, you know, putting a puzzle back together. Yeah, I shattered it. That's what I did. I shattered it. So I shattered my wrist. And I do know that it hurt. I mean, the way I'm going to tell this story is going to sound so crazy. I do know that it hurt. In fact, a couple times when the doctor would grab it and move it, there would be so much pain that I would almost pass out. So intellectually, I know that it hurt. But at the same time, that pain never touched me. I don't know how to describe this, except if someone else has had the same experience, they know. I had absolute joy through the entire experience. I was having fun, not having fun with having a broken wrist, just having fun being alive. I mean, I was still alive. I was just as alive with a broken wrist as I was before the wrist was broken. You know, just being life, I should say. Being life is a joy. And that being life didn't stop when I shattered my wrist. And somehow my focus had changed so that instead of being focused on the pain, I was focused on being life, and that was still as great as ever. And so I was as happy as ever. This was just something else that was happening. Just like if I went to the grocery store and bought milk, now there's a shattered wrist. I mean, literally, it was just something else that was happening, and it did not touch the being life at all. What caused that shift in perception? It had to have been the healing of that belief. You see, if the belief was still there, that suffering is the most real thing in the world, I am certain I would have suffered with the pain of that shattered wrist. But when the belief is gone, the way of perceiving is different. And a year after that, right? You guys have written about this too. A year after that, so this would have been March of 2015, I got thrown from a horse while it was galloping. And I'll tell you, when I hit that ground, oh my God, I had no idea ground was so hard. Some of you may have had this experience. You may know what it feels like to get thrown from a horse that's galloping. I don't know how these cowboys do it. There was most definitely pain in the body. And in fact, there was so much pain in the body that I could not tell at that point if I would ever move again. The thought crossed my mind that I might have like a broken neck, broken back, and be paralyzed because there was so much pain. And yet, oh my God, listen to what I'm saying, because this is the truth. It did not touch my joy. Not a nanosecond. Not a nanosecond. It didn't. It was the most amazing thing in the world. I remember we were on a trip with a guide. And of course, the guide immediately felt bad, you know. And I remember being more concerned about letting the guide know this wasn't his fault and he didn't have to feel bad. I was more concerned about him than I was about me. And the reason I was more concerned about him than me is because I knew I was okay, even though I didn't know if my neck and my back were broken. You see, that had no relevance at all. My neck and my back could have been broken. It could be that I was never going to move again for the rest of my life, and I knew that I was okay. But this guy developing this guilt cloud around him, he needed my help. So I'm laying there on the ground, not sure if I'll ever move again, and I am talking to him, trying to help him see that it's okay. How could that be? It's because the belief was healed. It has to be. It has to be. Otherwise, that suffering would have had to have consumed me, because I'm guessing it was actually more pain than I felt with the illness, although it's very, very hard to gauge, because it's like trying to gauge through two different minds. Right? One mind had one experience and one mind had another experience, and you can't exactly compare them. I mean, it's like the pain was there and yet it wasn't. It didn't touch me. It only touched the body. So that's what this quote is saying. Listen to this quote. This quote says, though this creation is unreal, yet, on account of the emergence of the ego sense, it appears to be solidly real. What is the ego sense? The ego sense is a collection of beliefs, opinions, learned ideas, identities, all ideas, all concepts. And when we hold to those ideas and concepts, that is what feels like me. That's me. I'm the one who was sexually abused when I was a child. Or, you know, I'm the one that's always the head of the class and, you know, gets promoted the fastest. Or whatever identity we have based on our experience and our upbringing and our conditioning, right? And our fears, like my fear of suffering. And when we see the world through that ego sense, the world seems very, very real. And what we don't realize, even though we study spirituality all of the time, what most of us don't realize is, hey, guess what? That's the truth. And if we would just focus our attention on healing our false ideas instead of continuing to believe that the problem is out there, the problems actually disappear. I mean, the circumstance may still happen. You may still be thrown from a galloping horse. But the problem of suffering being more real than truth is not there because the belief is gone. Or your husband may still leave you. But the problem of feeling rejected is gone because you no longer carry the belief in rejection. Now this is just a change and life is just going in a different direction now, right? Our ego sense is the cause of all of our problems. Our ego sense is what makes those problems seem so real. And so then again, instead of trying to fix the outer problems, which will only be replaced by another outer problem, what the spiritual student does is look within. Allow the healing. Yeah, focus on healing our false beliefs, because when they're healed, all the problems disappear. Fix the cause, not the effect. Absolutely. So you guys get this, at least intellectually. But the story that I just told you is a true story. And it's an amazing story to me, an amazing story. That's how powerful this truth is. So let me just read this journal entry one more time. Remember, this was prior to the healing of the false belief, prior to me even seeing it very, very clearly, even though I wrote this down. Something is not healed in me. It is my perception of the worst, extreme suffering, and unacceptable conditions. These I feel I do not want to be real. And this feeling comes from the fear that they are. It comes from the fear that the illusion of a spiritual reality stops here, where the absolute reality of suffering is too real to be denied. So that's the scene of a false belief that, even though it was written down in February, wasn't completely seen until March. That's when really the insight hit, was March. So I'm moving on to 714B. says, when a belief is in the mind, that belief is perceived. Funny, don't you think it's funny? It's funny to me that I wrote all this stuff about a month before I really got it. I just think it's funny. It's funny to look back on these things and see how the timeline unfolded. Obviously, I was already in a healing momentum, but I just wasn't fully seeing it yet. So this one's pretty short, and I think I've told the story, so I think I've made this point. I will just read it again. When a belief is in the mind, that belief is perceived. And that's why I suffered so much with the sickness, right? Because the belief was in the mind. That's why I did not suffer so much when thrown off the horse or shattering the wrist, because the belief was not in the mind. It's as simple as that. As simple as that. So is there a 714C? Yes, there is. Let's go have a look at it. When one believes what appears in the world, true seeing is blocked by the choice for false perception. When one believes what appears in the world, true seeing is blocked by the choice for false perception. So let's go back to the story of when I had this illness and I was really, really suffering. I mentioned to you that when I was in the height of the suffering, I could not separate myself from the suffering enough to even look at it, right? I just couldn't. And that, again, was because of the belief in the mind that this was the most real thing there is, suffering. But after the drugs took effect, thank God for medicine, I was able to step back a little bit with the help of the medication. And that's when I was able to accept there must be something in me, some belief in me that is causing this level of suffering. There must be, although I didn't see it clearly yet. And then I told you that once I accepted there must be something in me, and then I rested. I just rested, right? That's when these memories started coming up. And these memories, you know, they were really showing me what needed to be seen. So it happened very naturally. But let's pretend I did this differently. Let's pretend like the medication came and now I felt better and I just stayed with this. That sickness is hell. Whatever that sickness was, that was bad. That was the cause of my suffering. You know, I never want that sickness again. You see, if I kept the blame for the suffering out there, I would have never experienced the healing. What was most important about my experience is I didn't keep the suffering out there in the disease. I accepted there must be something in me that is causing this level of suffering. And you guys, you know, I can look in the room and I can see there are people here who haven't known me for 10 years. And so you don't know all of my stories. But there are people here in the room who have known me for 10 years. And you do know all of my stories. So you know, for example, you know about the story about when Laurent and I were sharing a bedroom. We were a couple. We were madly in love. Everything was great. And then all of a sudden, for no apparent reason, he goes into the other room in the house and begins to avoid me. You remember that story? How I would come out in the house and move about in the daytime. He would wait until I went to bed at night, and he knew I was in bed before he came out of his room, and he lived in the house in the nighttime. And if he did happen to get up to go to the bathroom or something during the day and we passed each other, he would look at me with so much hate in his eyes. And do you remember how I felt? Rejected. Like the ugliest woman in the world is really how I felt. But do you remember the end of that story? Do you remember I went to Holy Spirit? And Holy Spirit said, it's not Laurent that's hurting you, it's your own belief in rejectability. And Holy Spirit told me every time the thought came into my mind that Laurent was somehow hurting me, for me to say to myself, it's not Laurent that's hurting me, it's my own belief in my own rejectability. And remember, for about 2 months, it seems like I walked around saying that to myself. And then one day, I felt this light around my broken heart. And within a day of feeling that, I no longer believed in rejection. I mean, literally. I no longer saw rejection. I couldn't even look at Laurent behaving the same way and see me being rejected anymore. All I could see was a brother suffering. And now instead of feeling rejected and feeling ugly and all of that, I just wanted to be helpful if I could. Right? And then there's this other story. This other story. Oh, and by the way, you know, like Teddy and Vicky, when Teddy and Vicky broke up, I remember so many people saying, not Teddy and Vicky. And I remember people thinking that Teddy was rejecting Vicky. I remember that language. I could not see that because I don't believe in rejection. The only thing I could see was that it was time for Teddy and Vicky to have a different form of relationship. It's the only thing I could see because I don't believe in rejection. I don't see through rejection anymore. And of course, there's the other story about how I let go of the belief in betrayal. Do you remember that one? When it appeared that somebody had betrayed me? But then I saw in my mind this long line of people who had betrayed me in my lifetime. And I saw what each of those stories had in common. In each story, I had identified, first of all, a relationship. Like, that person is my brother. That person is my best friend. That person is my boyfriend. That person is my boss. That person is my employee. That person is my spiritual teacher. Right? I had identified a relationship. That was the first thing they all had in common. The second thing they all had in common is that I had beliefs about how people should be in that type of relationship. So here's how brothers and sisters are supposed to be. Here's how best friends are supposed to be. Here's how boyfriends and girlfriends are supposed to be, etc. And then the other person broke one of my rules, which was in my mind that I never discussed with them, and I called that a betrayal. I began to see that the whole thing was nothing but a buildup of concepts in my mind, that I made up the whole thing. And if I realized this person was not my brother, not my best friend, not my boyfriend, not my teacher, not my boss, they were the free son of God, and there were no rules put upon them, then I could never again experience betrayal. You see, that's what this is all about. We experience these things, very real suffering, rejection, betrayal, etc., 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 because they're a part of our ego sense. They're a part of who I am, at least who I think I am, right? And that's what this quote is all about. That's what this journal entry is all about. When one believes what appears in the world, true seeing is blocked by the choice for false perception. If I believe Laurent was the cause of my pain, rejection would have never been healed. If I believe this person had betrayed me, yet it's his fault, it's his fault, it's his fault, the belief in betrayal would have never been healed in me. We have to quit blaming the outside if we want to see with true perception. We have to quit blaming the outside if we want to see with true perception. This is a requirement, not an option. Again, when one believes what appears in the world, true seeing is blocked by the choice for false perception. And I also have a 714D. Let's see what this is. 714D says, the belief in an I who believes and perceives is the root of all false perception. Without an I to believe and perceive, what false perception could appear? So yeah, without that primary false belief, I, there isn't an I who can believe that suffering is more real than truth. Without that false I, there isn't an I who can believe in rejection. There's no ego sense at all. So although I've talked about letting go of pieces of the ego sense, there is a way to let go of the entire ego sense, and that is letting go of the belief in I or in me, this person. And that, of course, is what self-inquiry really is about, isn't it? It's about looking over and over and over again until I see that I am not the ego sense. And when I see that I am not the ego sense, the whole bundle gets healed together. So thank you very much for looking at quote 714 with me tonight. I hope it was helpful to you. What I'm going to do now is just leave for a couple minutes. I'm actually just going to put the mic down. I won't leave the room. I'll raise my hand when I'm done. I'm going to save this file and then open up the Michael Langford audio and then come back and we'll listen to the Michael Langford audio. All right? Lynn, the mic is yours.